This is Jenny.
And this is Amanda.
And we're from Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda.
Every second and fourth Tuesday of the month here on WGXC, Acre, Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM.
You can find out about so many local events, like the traditional Irish music session. Every Sunday there's an open Irish music jam at the Shamrock House in East Durham from 2 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org and add your own event to the WGXC community calendar and have it read on the radio at 90.7 FM by going to WGXC.org and clicking on the community calendar.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-I's into here's-how-you-cans. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
Wavefarms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Leah Bertucci of Ridgewood, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Daily News for Friday, April 14th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Luke Parsonow reports at New York State of Politics that U.S. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg was in the area April 13th, with Governor Kathy Hochul touting $21 million in improvements to the Castleton-on-Hudson Bridge, where the New York State Thruway crosses the Hudson River, connecting Albany and Rensselaer counties. The money is going to a new eastbound bridge deck, a crash-tested railing for safety, and better drainage to avoid hydroplaning on the bridge that was built in 1959 and carries about 17,000 travelers each day. Buttigieg said, quote, "If you look at that bridge, it represents the very latest engineering and construction ingenuity available in the 1950s. But today it takes nearly monthly repairs just to keep it in service," unquote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. Tyler A. McNeil reports in the Daily Gazette that China's recent spy balloon has inspired some New York Democrats to draft a bill to ban foreign adversaries from purchasing farmland in the state. In the state Senate, Saugerties Democrat Michelle Hinchey is introducing the proposal, and Assemblyperson Angelo Santa Barbara is in the other Albany legislative chamber with the bill. Santa Barbara said, quote, "We saw a spy balloon go over our country surveying property, land sites, information that was collected, and that's concerning. So that's what we're finding. So what we're finding is that I feel like we're not seeing enough action in Washington, D.C. to address these issues," unquote. Santa Barbara says, wants the state to identify where potential adversary-owned properties are located. But Assemblymember Robert Smullen, a Republican, said, quote, "We in New York State don't have the resources to define whether or not a foreign entity is controlled by the Communist Party, for instance, or China," unquote. Representative Paul Tonko, a Democrat who represents the 20th Congressional District, did not comment to the newspaper about the story. But Republican Elise Stefanik, who represents the 21st Congressional District, noted she has already introduced a similar bill at the federal level. Stefanik said, quote, "As my bill continues to gain support, I will work to ensure foreign ownership of American farmland does not undermine our national security, especially as our foreign adversaries increase their attempts to threaten our agricultural land and businesses," unquote. Read more about this story in the Daily Gazette. News 10 in Albany reports that the New York State Department of Agriculture is expanding an initiative to help families purchase food made by New York farmers. The Fresh to You program doubles the buying power for SNAP recipients spending money at farmers markets. Quote, this new dollar-for-dollar match is going to allow farmers to offer more products to our families and allow families to purchase more healthy food for their own families, unquote. Richard Ball, the New York State Agricultural Commissioner, said. The New York State Department of Agriculture website has more information about the program. Brooklyn Vegan runs down the lineup for the 2023 edition of 24-Hour Drone, set for May 27th and 28th at Basilica Hudson in Hudson. The annual event has been on hold in person since 2019 because of the COVID-19 pandemic, but it's back this year with Yuka C. Honda of Cebu Mato, Wolf Eyes, Liturgy, Sarah Hennies, Laura Ortman, and others performing at the event, which each year is webcast at WGXC.org and broadcast on 90.7 FM. The Basilica Hudson website has all the details about the show May 27th and 28th that will air on WGXC. Read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, April 14th. Local early morning temperatures range from 48 degrees in Steventown to 60 in Kinderhook. The regional average soil temperature is 53 degrees. And pollen levels will be high today and for the whole weekend, despite the moisture. Air quality alerts are up for most of the surrounding counties, so take it easy. Air pollution is not on your side. Mostly sunny skies today drive temperatures up to 79 degrees. Overnight, we dip to 54. Then, Saturday, things take a turn. 11 a.m., rain chances show up. 2 p.m., we see a high temperature of 66 degrees. And rain chances kick up, bringing some thunder with it. Overnight, rain chances continue as we see a low of 53. Sunday, light rain chances linger all day as we see a high of 60. Monday, high of 53 and a bunch more rain all day long. Today's river temperature will be 48.7 degrees and the tide strength will be low. Sunset today will be at 7:20 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:13 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances have diminished to 5%. Solar wind speed is currently 367.3 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair below 15 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 154. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Broadcast over any FM car radio.
Hey, good looking. We'll be back to pick you up later.
Throw away your bulky transmitters and broadcasting towers. The Superstar Celebrity Microphone lets you hear your voice through any AM radio.
Hey, good looking. We'll be back to pick you up later.
He's in for some loving.
Thank you.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
We showing the United States of America and the Republicans in Tennessee that the movement is still alive. Yeah.
Tennessee State Representative Justin Pearson, the second of two black Democrats expelled from the GOP-led House, was sworn in Thursday after Shelby County commissioners unanimously voted to reinstate him. Republicans voted to remove Pearson and Representative Justin Jones last week for taking part in a gun violence protest on the House floor following a shooting at a Nashville school. Attorney General Merrick Garland says a Massachusetts Air National Guard member has been arrested in connection with the leak of highly classified military documents.
I want to thank the FBI, Justice Department prosecutors, and our colleagues at the Department of Defense for their diligent work on this case.
The Biden administration has been working to contain the fallout from the leaked information, which included an assessment of Ukraine's military readiness. The Florida legislature has voted to ban abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy. The bill now heads to the desk of Governor Ron DeSantis, who has signaled that he will sign it. A federal appeals court has ruled that the abortion medication mifepristone can remain on the market for now, but with new limitations. Leaders in states where abortion remains legal say they are stockpiling the pills in case they become restricted, including Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey.
Abortion, medication abortion, will remain safe, legal, and accessible here in the Commonwealth.
The appeals court ruled the medication can be used up to 7 weeks into a pregnancy, not 10, and it can no longer be sent in the mail. The Justice Department says it will ask the Supreme Court for an emergency order to stop the ruling from taking effect. California Senator Dianne Feinstein has asked to be temporarily replaced on the Senate Judiciary Committee after two fellow Democrats called on her to resign because of her extended health absence. Lawmakers are concerned Feinstein, a supporter of abortion rights, is holding up the votes to confirm judges who will uphold reproductive rights.
I very much regret that abortion has become such a political issue.
The 89-year-old Feinstein has already announced she will not seek re-election in 2024. Republicans have introduced legislation that would prevent any state or local prosecutor from using federal funds to investigate a president and force Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg's office to return all federal funding it has received since Bragg took office. Ohio Representative Jim Jordan tells Fox News that Bragg created a political operation to indict former President Donald Trump.
He used federal money to do that with no underlying crime here. He couldn't even state that at the press conference.
Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer has signed a law requiring background checks for all gun purchases, as well as the safe storage of weapons when a child is likely to be present. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Showing they bought into President Trump's debunked fraud allegations, the majority of Shasta County, California's Board of Supervisors terminated their contract for Dominion Voting Systems ballot tabulation machines. Then, supervisors voted to hand count ballots in a county with over 111,000 registered voters. In 2020, the Northern California county gave the former president 65% of the vote. The Guardian reports that election deniers found allies on the county's Board of Supervisors and, after contentious public meetings, voted to terminate the contract with Dominion. According to the Reading Record Searchlight, one supervisor even communicated with MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell. Lindell's group has been perpetuating fraud theories, and Lindell offered financial assistance for hand counting and to subsidize any legal costs. The county's 20-year registrar of voters told supervisors that as many as 1,200 additional people would be needed to count the ballots by hand at an estimated $1.6 million. Then last week, the county supervisors retained Hart InterCivic to design an all-paper hand-count infrastructure at a cost of $950,000. The Record Searchlight quoted County Supervisor Mary Rickert, who voted against the move, as saying, "As a fiscal conservative, I'm highly offended by the fact that the majority of the board is willing to spend over $2 million to replace the Dominion system." We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Hello, the host, Randall Martin. And, you know, Hudson and both Columbia and Greene County are extraordinary places for music. And we are fortunate in Hudson, right here on Warren Street, to have a relatively new venue opening up and showcasing all sorts of great local, national, and international talent. And so who I have here today, as I have Shannon McGee, and he is going to tell us about Park Theater, his brand new, well, not brand new, but again, a evolving venue that's really doing great things. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, Randall. How are you?
I am very well myself. All right, so by way of introduction, can you give our audience, for those who don't know you, tell them a little bit about yourself and your great theater.
Sure, sure. My name is Shannon McGee. I grew up locally here in the Hudson Valley. Graduated from Catskill High School in 1994. I'm dating myself, but grew up in the area, family in Hudson, and so I spent a lot of my youthful days in Hudson, lifeguarding at Oakdale and Lake Taconic, and spending quite a bit of time with my grandmother and my father's family. And I left at 18, went to college, you know, lived in various places around the country, from New York to Maui to California and Colorado, and most recently spent some time in South Africa. Mm-hmm. For about 4 or 5 years before moving home to Hudson and buying this theater. And so, I came home to do a project with my father. He showed me the theater in 2016. Mm. And at the time, it was very run down and falling over. The city of Hudson actually wanted to knock it down because it was deemed unsafe. And my dad walked me in the first day and I looked at him and I told him he was out of his mind.
Okay.
But now we are 2023 and we've been open. We've been doing music for, I guess, a few years now, amongst other things. But we started off just doing a summer concert series during COVID.
Yeah, I remember
that. And now we've moved inside and we're doing some indoor shows to, entertain our local community and all the visitors that come to Hudson.
Now, you took the challenge, as many do. You know, it was an old building in disrepair. What did you see, like, when you first went in there? Like, how did you form a vision for what it could be?
It's interesting. I mean, I think I felt more than I saw. There was a lot of unique architecture on the outside, some, you know, incredible moldings and the Park Theater lettering up at the top of the building and the arch and things like that. I think when I walked inside, I took out 42 tons of garbage in the first 2 weeks of owning the building. Mm-hmm. But quite honestly, it was the energy. I felt the energy of the building and still gives me chills to this day. Every time I even say it. It was really the energy of the building, and the creaking and the sounds that it was making as it was, begging for somebody to come along and repair it. I think the irony of it was that my family, my father's family, cousins and uncles, you know, my dad's uncle, actually ran the theater businesses in Hudson, the movie theater businesses, since 1921. And the building was built in 1921. So there was just some irony with the family and actually closing the theater out on Fairview in 2016 when I bought it. So, just some family irony, which only added to it.
Very, very interesting. And I witnessed some of that process when you were restoring it, and you did. I mean, it was such an incredible job, the scaffolding of the building, you know, the attention to detail, all the fine painting and the stripping of the painting. This was quite the restoration.
It was no small feat. We had to jack the building up. It was 18 and a half inches low on the right side.
Whoa.
There was a river running through it. It was being held up by hydraulic jacks and pole jacks when I first bought it. It took probably nearly 2 years to jack it up and get it back to within a quarter of an inch.
Wow.
Wow. Of being leveled. And I think we started with the apartments upstairs because there's two large apartments on the second and the third floor.
Okay.
And, more just because there was two versus one downstairs. And, kind of moved through the restoration process through COVID and Hudson, I guess, caught extra fire when COVID happened and people were leaving the city. But I was very intentional on everything that I did. I painted the building twice because I wasn't happy the first time. I put a tile mosaic out in front so everybody would know what the name of the place was, since people don't look 40, 50 feet in the air. And I did my best to recreate all the moldings that I needed to repair. And even went around the city of Hudson for architectural ideas for some of the, additional things that I put in the place, because there was no pictures. There's no pictures of this building.
Oh, really?
From the 20s. There's nothing that exists before maybe the 60s or the 70s when it was no longer a theater.
Okay. Okay. And, I was in there. I came in that theater the first time recently. You had a very interesting show. You had an exhibit of the gentleman that was doing all the famous artwork for album covers and many singers or songwriters that had also delved into the art world and also made the stills, the graphic stills for Scooby-Doo and a lot of the big time animations. And so that was the first time I was back in there. And it is a very warm space. It's a warm, nice, it's a very warm room.
Yeah, I mean, the goal is to, be warm and inviting and extend the space to, my community and tourists alike. Being from the area, it's really important for my, local community to feel comfortable walking in the door. And at the same time, we are a tourist community. So we need to invite the tourist in. And so we started with, art. We started with some art. We always did music in the summers. We did five Second Saturday sessions where we blasted music outside and, had a concert in the street, if you will.
I know. It was like a block party. You had Tommy Stinson out there performing. And it was such a great vibe. It reminded me of a block party in the city. And, there were still cars moving around on Warren Street, but there was a significant crowd, outside on the streets. And it was such a good energy and such an invigorating thing. I had actually never seen anything like that happen on Warren Street.
Well, and that was kind of the statement, right? I think I finished the building in 2021. And we opened our doors, and it was 100-year anniversary of the Park Theater.
Okay.
And so our very, 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 very first show was in the streets on the anniversary, on the 100-year anniversary. So it was May 9th, 2021, and we actually presented a band called Jedi Johnston with Escaper. And Jedi Johnston is a well-known drummer. He's played with the likes of David Byrne some other folks. And he actually was on tour with David Byrne. And Escaper is playing all over the city and Brooklyn Bowl and a lot of festivals. And they just came up and blasted music out into the streets. And it was a huge statement. And, we had, I think each show we've always had, 200, 300, 400 people out on Warren Street, consuming free live music. And it was meant to be a statement. It was meant to be a statement. And we continued that through 2021, had some amazing musicians take the stage, people that have played with, or opened up for the Lumineers. Diana DeMuth was here. Michaela Davis was here. And we ended it in September with Tommy Stinson and Cowboys in the Campfire. And we probably had 500 people here. And we did a fundraiser for Perfect 10, which is the local girls organization for after school care and really development. It's kind of like the Girls Club, a development of young women. And it was magical. And so we decided to do it again in 2022. And, you know, once again, had some unbelievable musicians, guys that have played with Prince and Bruce Springsteen. And I mean, it's just amazing, amazing musicians. And we decided to make every show a fundraiser at that time, and or an awareness campaign. So we raised money for the Little League, the Hudson Little League. We did Perfect 10 again. We did a Lighthouse campaign, awareness campaign, Planned Parenthood awareness campaign, Hudson Youth. We did. So yeah, it was very much about, you know, bringing the community out, giving them a place to go. They're fully inclusive. Everybody's invited. And yeah, it was magical.
Well, that mystery guest we have in our studio, Tamar Adler.
Yay! Tamar Adler.
Yay! The author of The Everlasting Meal Cookbook. Now, you all know from our show, at least.
Yes.
The Everlasting Meal, her first book.
Yep.
Which we are great fans of. Now, that's right, folks. Now you can buy a cookbook based on the principles of an everlasting meal.
And, you know, an everlasting meal is also how I got it right away, because poor people who are middle income tend to live out of that. That's what we live out of. That is our base, right? That between the first meal and that last meal that was prepared, mm-hmm. you're living out of that. You're reconstructing it. You're making it go on.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is very profound, and I agree with you. I mean, I'm not poor, but you
always...
You
grew up, you know, middle class. Yeah. You grew up, you know.
Exactly. And, you know, as I was telling you, I think last week, our go-to meal when there was no food was, and I told Tamar this story also, was bologna. Fried bologna.
Fried bologna.
And when I saw that one of Tamar's favorite restaurants, by the way, shout out to Cafe Muffin, had fried bologna, I just assumed it was like star-bought bologna, you know? It turns out they make their own bologna, and
they
it's delicious.
They make their own
it's
bologna.
Incredible.
Right here in the city of Hudson.
Right here in the city of Hudson.
Crazy.
Anyway, Tamar, back from a whirlwind tour.
I know. I should be getting an autograph right now.
I know.
I meant to bring you my book, which I was going to autograph, on the page that you are featured.
What?
Yes.
What?
I didn't want to tell
what,
Tom.
What?
I didn't want to tell Tom because you know how he gets emotional.
Well, and I think a little competitive because he likes to talk about how he's in the Lil Debs Oasis
club. Ooh.
Not only does he like to talk about it, he likes to rub it in.
But you are in the Everlasting.
I didn't
field.
Know that.
Yeah.
What page?
So it's not about what page. It's about what is the efficacy of what I had to say, the jewels
Jesus
and the
Christmas.
Gems.
How much help you're giving to the everyday cook who needs
inspiration.
Help and inspiration.
And you know what? It's keep it simple, right? Keeping it simple.
No, so Seal and I have talked a lot about using all of everything, and mm-hmm. I turned to you for inspiration for one of the recipes, and you turned to your mom.
Yes.
Which made me really happy because that's where all of the knowledge actually is.
Yeah. Right?
People have asked me where I learned what's in this book and mm-hmm. or like where I came up with what's in this book.
Right.
I keep on saying I didn't come up with anything. Like all of this is passed down.
That's a fact.
And, you know, and it was just collecting and asking and sure learning over the years, but learning from people who learn from people. It's not, I think that when people talk about like having a proprietary recipe or this is my recipe, they're skipping over all of the people who've made it before them.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That happens a lot. The other thing I like about it, not just about, leftovers, but it's also about stuff you've been ignoring in the refrigerator. You know, that happens more
the
than
stuff
me.
You ignore is the jewels.
I know, right?
Yeah.
It is.
Right? And they're like, I feel like celery. I feel like I have not seen a crisper drawer without wilty celery in it.
True in my house.
Do you have, you have wilty celery, right?
Well,
like,
you know,
it's so useful.
Except I've been starting using it more.
Oh, great.
Because?
Partly inspired by The Everlasting Meal Cookbook by Tamar Adler, published by Scribner's, right?
By Scribner, yeah. Scribner.
There you go. Just to, you know, because you'll sell more books on our show than any of those, ABC, NBC, CBS, NPR.
No. It's all about WGXC.
It's all about WGXC. And then it's also about, it's not just even leftovers, because some people, like my partner Luis is traumatized by leftovers. He never wants to hear about leftovers, right? And so I said to him, I found a way. He said, what are you talking about? And I said,
you shouldn't imitate his accent, really. That's just so wrong.
Whatever. We're from the islands.
Okay, man.
Don't do it. So he said, what are you talking about? And I said, I have a friend that believes that leftovers aren't really that thing that you and I grew up with. There's another step in the process. And I said, I found a way to secure our sancocho before our soup before it starts to have that taste. So I actually harvest it warm into the fridge. And so then he'll eat it the next day.
I mean, yeah, it's about just about perspective, right?
Right.
How you look at it and right. doing the things that make it not taste like it did when you were growing up. And,
right.
you know, that, like, just heat it up or have that leftover flavor. That,
yeah. Yeah.
That we all know.
And then I also use glass. I don't use plastic anymore. That was another step I mm-hmm. took in the direction. Because I really value not throwing things out, not just discarding things. Like, even... we call it the bun out in Jamaica, but in Puerto Rico they call it the bag out, which is the bottom burnt part of the rice.
Mm-hmm.
I have a picture when I was about 3 on the floor eating that, like just crunching it up. And you know, my mother used to make it with, like, I don't know if she put what kind of thing she put on it, but it always had a little bit of scallions, a little bit of fresh thyme.
Those are, yeah.
Will you ask her? I guess this is the first I've heard of that, and I was actually just in Jamaica and I was asking people, like, what are the leftovers things here? And
yeah.
you know, I didn't learn that much, but, like, I love that crispy part of a rice.
Yeah.
I know what it is mm-hmm. in Persian, and I think it has a word in Korean, too.
Oh, everybody's got a word for that.
It's
yeah.
so good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, okay. you know, I used to just live out of that. You know, Carmen lives out of that right now.
Will she put scallions on it?
No, I think for my daughter, she's a little bit lighter. She uses a little bit of nutritional yeast, that's a little bit of butter, and Carmen will go to town.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know whether... I think I'm not going to tell Lewis this. I'm going to let Carmen and he discover this about each other. Lewis thinks he invented... This is my 6-year-old.
Right.
He invented the combination of rice, nutritional yeast, and butter.
Well, you know, really? That's okay. Yeah. If it's going to give him the pride that he needs, let him have it.
Listen to you. Listen to you.
Listen, those kids that we're talking about...
Right. I know them.
You know them, right?
Yeah.
They have a tricky palate.
Yeah.
And all you're trying to do is get them nutrition. So you kind of have to play this game all the time. Mm-hmm. It keeps you sharp too, right?
Yeah, and having them, I totally agree that having them feel agency.
Yes.
Like, yeah. He thinks he invented mixture rice,
yeah.
which means that no matter what else there is, he will eat mixture rice.
Does he ever reject your leftover concoctions?
Oh, yeah.
They don't like anything that's like black or like she doesn't like thyme. If the thyme is fresh and green,
mm-hmm.
she'll eat it. But when it starts to get cooked down and get a little black, she doesn't want it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's like, I don't want that.
And then also mixed together.
Yeah.
Like Lewis has a very strong...
My oldest son was like that.
Separate.
Keeping everything separate.
Really?
Okay. You like ham, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
You like cheese, right? Yeah. You like bread. Yeah. He'll eat all those things.
But separately.
Interesting.
No way.
Carmen, too. She'll eat cheese only if it's by itself, like in a little strip. Mm. She won't eat the cheese flat on a sandwich. She just can't.
Yeah. Wild. So my leftover solution has always been what I believe the English call bubble and squeak. You just
Ooh.
Take whatever you got. Throw it in a pot, maybe throw an egg in there and stir it up, you know?
That sounds like some Korean stuff, Tom.
I guess it's like what everybody
Fried
does,
rice.
Right? I mean, that's not unusual, right?
Squeak is potatoes and cabbage.
Oh, is that what it traditionally was? I see, I didn't know. My friend called it that.
Yeah, but every culture
has something.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
heat it up, chop it up. I really like to just to kind of like elevate that a little bit and make it more exciting. Start with a hot pan. Good fat, like ghee is really great. I love that ghee that I got.
You like that clarified ghee?
Yeah,
okay, great.
So good. And then you could do a little bit of chopped onion, a little bit of chopped ginger, a couple of chilies if you like that, and then put in your vegetables. Let them get a little bit crispy in places. Put an egg on that. And it's like, you know,
nice.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I bought a jar of Calabrian chilies recently. Let me tell you something. Don't put too many of those in anything.
I was going to say, Tom, you can go numb. Yeah.
It was something. Oh, I know what I wanted to ask you. What's the best Asian chili oil, and where do you get it around here?
Okay. So
do you have to order it?
Yeah. My favorite one is, so we have 2 Asian groceries in Albany. Mm. One of them's called the Asian Supermarket.
Yep, that's on Central.
And then, right, and then there's the smaller one.
Which is off of, it's not Fuller, it's Central, but then you make a left.
Yeah, and it's a little parking lot. I forget.
It's a little parking lot. I don't know what the name is, but I go there. I'm there at least twice a month.
That's good to know. Because I know I go.
Yeah, it's good to know.
Wes goes. You go. And Wes and I write each other, and we'll be like.
I'm here.
Yeah. So my favorite one does not have an English translation on it, but it's in the chili crisp aisle. It's
chili
Sichuan.
Crisp.
Yeah. So it's in both of those stores. There's a big
yeah
section.
They're committed to that.
Chili.
Really?
And so the one that I like the most actually has like cooked down chilies and herbs. The actual chilies are a little bit crispy, and there are peanuts in it.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Can you imagine how much that adds? It's like, and then I sent Wes to get it for me once because he was there. I gave him some of mine. He was like, oh, I'll get you some too. He got a totally different one.
Oh, no. Instead,
but also great.
Right.
Yeah. I loved it. We were like, this is different, but also good. It cool. has little fried soybeans.
I have a feeling I know this, Wes, and I have a feeling I can get him to get me some too.
Oh, boy.
Oh.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
As we near Earth Day, many of us are thinking about what we can personally do for a positive environmental impact, like reducing our plastic consumption. But when we head to the grocery store, it is difficult to avoid single-use plastic packaging. The Packaging Reduction and Recycling Infrastructure Act is trying to change that. And to tell us more, we're now joined by Alexis Goldsmith of Beyond Plastics. Welcome back to Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thanks for having me back.
So how would the Packaging Reduction and Recycling Infrastructure Act change our plastic use in the grocery store and beyond?
So this act is an extended producer responsibility for packaging bill that would require any company that sells a product in packaging in New York State, producing more than one ton of packaging waste in a year, to pay for the management of that packaging waste. So currently, taxpayers pay for the collection, the sorting, the recycling, the landfilling, and the incineration of packaging waste. So the idea is that producers would have to pay for that instead. But this bill goes even farther than that. It actually requires a 50% reduction in packaging overall, and then the remaining packaging must reach strict recycling standards. The companies would be required to get 12 toxic chemicals out of packaging, and the bill also sets a process for adding chemicals to that list in the future. And it would prohibit any form of incineration or chemical recycling, which is turning plastic waste into fuel and chemicals, from counting towards those recycling targets.
Now, one of the states' best programs to reduce waste and litter has been the bottle bill, which was passed 40 years ago. What's going on, or how would the bigger, better bottle bill, expanded bottle bill, actually try to reduce the amount of plastic and other waste?
So the bottle bill currently in New York State has a 5-cent deposit on containers that are covered under the law. But as you said, it's 40 years old. So in that, since the bottle bill was passed in the 80s, a lot more new products have come onto the market, like kombucha and tea, and those are not covered by the bottle bill currently, as well as wine, liquor, nips, and hard cider. So the bigger, better bottle bill, which is Senate Bill 237, would expand the types of containers that are covered to include those that I just listed, and it would double the deposit to a dime. And doing this would increase our redemption rate by about 50%. Right now, we get about 64% of the containers back. Just making these changes means we would get 90% of the containers back. And it would also double the wages of approximately 10,000 canners in the state who are vulnerable workers that make their living from collecting and redeeming containers for the deposit.
These bottles are both plastic and glass. Can you talk briefly about the reusability, the cycle of reuse of both of those materials?
Sure. So aluminum can be recycled with minimal loss of material. So it gets turned into new aluminum cans. Glass is more difficult. There's problems with recycling glass. It can get turned into glasfalt, which is chipping it up into asphalt. It can be turned into fiberglass insulation. And then plastic is often downcycled, meaning it's turned into a product of lesser value and eventually discarded. So PET plastic bottles, which are number one and number two bottles, are usually turned into things like clothing, like fleece, and then eventually they're discarded. So the plastic isn't usually turned into new bottles.
Now, some of these issues were being discussed as part of the state budget. I believe particularly the governor included an extended producer responsibility proposal in her budget, and at least one of the houses, I believe, did include the expanded bottle bill. We're already late on the state budget, but how are these, you know, various waste reduction proposals doing in the budget process?
So Beyond Plastics supported doing the bottle bill in the budget. It's a fiscal issue. It's very straightforward to do. It's really an amendment to the existing bill. But we were very opposed to doing the Packaging Reduction and Recycling Act in the budget because this is a massive bill that will impact every aspect of New York's economy. And we really did not want it to be negotiated behind closed doors without adequate public oversight in the budget process. So as far as we know, the bottle bill and the EPR, the packaging reduction bill, are still in the Senate one house bill, but not in the Assembly one house bill. So we're not out of the woods yet. And it's really anybody's guess as to what's going to end up in the final budget. Who knows if they'll be done by next Monday or not.
And how does the upcoming legislative session look? Are there other bills that are in the works, or how does it look for you?
Assuming that we'll be able to keep the Packaging Reduction and Recycling Act out of the budget, which we feel confident that will happen, but I don't want to jinx it and say that it is going to happen. We will be working to, one, get this bill amended because it needs some changes to make it the most effective bill that it can be, and two, to get it passed in the legislative session, because we don't have time to wait to address single-use packaging and the environmental justice and climate problems that it is causing. So this bill is very ambitious, which is partly why the Senate wanted to do it in the budget, because when you have a big issue in the budget, the senators and the assembly members can't vote yes or no on single issues. They have to vote yes or no on the budget overall. So getting it passed in the legislative session may arguably be more difficult than passing it in the budget, but we will be able to know what exactly is in the bill, and we'll be able to get that public input that's so necessary to a big bill like this, because the what we call big plastic, the petrochemical interests, are in Albany. There are paid lobbyists in Albany every day talking to legislators about why packaging reduction isn't feasible, why we need chemical recycling, and all these false solutions for packaging waste that will only delay action. So building grassroots support for the bill is our main goal, and then getting it passed before the session ends on June 8th.
Now, I understand on May 2nd, there's a big New York is not disposable rally and advocacy day. Can people still sign up for that? And is any truth to the rumors that there's going to be a marching band as part of this rally?
I can't say for sure about the marching band, but yes, the name of the campaign is New York is Not Disposable, and we will be rallying in Albany on the steps of the Capitol building on Tuesday, May 2nd in the morning, and then from there, we'll be meeting with legislators until 4 o'clock. So I know it's a big ask for people to take off work to come to Albany. But like I said, the American Chemistry Council and their lobbyists are in Albany every day, and legislators don't often hear the other side of it from their own constituents. So to sign up for that, you can go to beyondplastics.org/events. We will, you need to RSVP so that we know which meetings to add you to, because we want to put you in meetings with your representatives. And then we'll prep you. There's going to be a meeting on May 1st, the night before, to give an overview of the bill. You'll be with a team. You won't be by yourself in these meetings. There's going to be a team leader who's a policy expert who will show you around the Capitol if you've never been there before. So this is really our hope, is for it to be a lot of people working together and not just, you know, one or two going to the Capitol.
I think we're out of time. So maybe you just explain it if people want to, you know, how to, you know, sign up for this lobby visit. And I remember in my last time I went with this group, I actually had a 11-year-old came with me. So I guess you could also be younger people are welcome to attend.
Yes, of course. We welcome people of all ages. To sign up, just go to beyondplastics.org/events. You'll see it right on that page. And you have to click through. You can register on Action Network. It's also on our Facebook page, which is Beyond Plastics Action on Facebook. And then just RSVP on Action Network so that we can put you in the meetings with your legislators, and you'll get all the details for the event.
Alexis Goldsmith from Beyond Plastics, thank you so much for joining us on Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thanks for having me.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
It's Thursday, April 13, 2023.
Today's actions will accelerate our ongoing transition to a clean vehicles future.
Biden EPA kicks off next phase of electric vehicle revolution. Crunch time and contentious negotiations over water cuts from the declining Colorado River. Plus,
the smoke is definitely toxic.
Massive plastics fire in Indiana expected to burn for days.
Is that Indiana State Fire Chief Steve Jones?
Yes, it is.
Indiana's Jones?
Yes.
All of those good stories and bad jokes straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Toyin.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
A new study shows that climate change is leading to more major league home runs, attributing at least 500 additional homers from 2010 to 2019 to Earth's human-made warming. And I'm being told the New York Yankees have offered carbon dioxide a $400 million contract.
Seems only fair. This is your Green News Report. I'm gonna soak up the sun. Okay, Desi Doyen, I'd like to apologize for my behavior so far. What do you have for us in today's Green News Report?
Well, first, another chemical disaster, this time in eastern Indiana. More than 2,000 residents of the town of Richmond remain evacuated after a massive fire at a plastics recycling facility ignited on Tuesday. The cause is under investigation. All employees are accounted for. Fire officials say the massive plume of toxic smoke from the fire is, quote, definitely toxic, and warned those downwind to shelter in place or leave the area. The fire is expected to burn for several more days.
So this fire comes on the same day or the day after the Biden administration's EPA was trying to curb pollution from plastics factories?
Yes, ironic, isn't it?
It sure is.
The fire highlights the never-ending toxicity of plastics and the fossil fuels they're made from. And now a landmark new study finds that plastics are responsible for a wide range of health impacts, including cancers and birth defects. The first-of-its-kind analysis examined the entire plastics life cycle, from extraction of the oil for manufacturing to dumping in landfills and oceans. The analysis found harms primarily to workers at plastics manufacturing and recycling plants and to residents near those facilities, linked to higher rates of cardiovascular disease, toxic metal poisoning, birth defects, and lung cancer.
Not good.
The researchers say the widespread hazardous impacts are magnified by low rates of recycling and the persistence of plastic pollution in the environment. They recommend a global treaty to control the manufacture and use of plastics, which is now under development by the United Nations.
Good luck with that.
In the contentious negotiations over water allocations from the rapidly declining Colorado River, the Biden administration this week laid out stark choices facing 7 western states that rely on the river, which is in steep decline due to chronic overconsumption and historic mega drought. The draft proposal is focused on keeping 2 of the nation's largest reservoirs from reaching Deadpool status, when levels are so low that water cannot flow past the dams. The proposals are pretty dire trade-offs. One path would cut by an equal percentage across the board for all users, potentially as much as 25%, which would hit California the hardest and trigger litigation. The other would preserve California's senior legal water rights and prioritize its farming regions that feed the nation, but would leave little for Arizona and Nevada.
I'm guessing California likes that second option better.
The states have until summer to reach an agreement, or the Interior Department will impose cuts. Finally, in a major announcement, Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Michael Regan this week proposed strict new tailpipe pollution limits that would put the United States at the forefront of the global transition to electric vehicles.
That'd be nice.
If adopted, the new standards would begin in model year 2027 and would effectively require more than half of all new cars and light trucks sold in the United States to be electric by 2030. The draft rules do not mandate electric vehicles or ban gas-powered models, and instead leave it up to automakers to decide how best to reduce overall fleet pollution. If the rules are adopted as proposed, EPA scientists say it would cut car and truck pollution and carbon emissions in half within a decade. EPA estimates the benefits of the new standards would exceed costs, saving consumers on average $12,000 over the life of a vehicle and revitalize American manufacturing. Plus, cutting pollution and greenhouse gas emissions will deliver massive savings on public health and climate costs.
That's close to $2 trillion in net benefits and over 10 billion tons of CO2 emissions avoided. This is historic news.
It may be historic, but, you know, I bet we could run the entire American car fleet on the anger of Fox News viewers after that story. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Electric car, so good, so far.
And now, here is your WGXE weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Friday, it will be mostly sunny with a temperature high near 84 degrees. Friday night, mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 58 degrees. And on Saturday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 74 degrees. And on Saturday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 54 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXE, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties. Thank you.
Thank you.